This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 24th of October 2014. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 24th of October 2014, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Now, the main headlines this week are £1 million guarantee for affordable housing, care home is still failing, report says, cookery fans queue to meet Hugh. So, may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Daphne.
The developer makes a U-turn decision over Silver Hill. The developer of the Silver Hill scheme in Winchester has done a surprise U-turn over the issue of affordable housing. Henderson has announced it will guarantee at least £1 million towards building homes for rent. It had previously said that its contribution would depend on Silver Hill's profitability, raising the prospect of the £165 million proposals possibly not making any payment for social housing. Now Henderson has submitted a statement with its planning application, pledging a minimum of £1 million. It said it now recognised the importance to the City Council of affordable housing. The first £1 million will be guaranteed, and the second £1 million subject to a profit level of 15%. The revised plans go to the Planning Committee on December the 11th. A scheme that included 100 affordable homes and a bus station got permission in 2009. Henderson's stance against social housing within Silver Hill itself remains. The dropping of the homes, as well as the new bus station, has attracted local opposition. Martin Perry, Director of Development at Henderson, said, "We have listened very carefully to what people in Winchester have told us about their concerns for affordable housing and made the best proposal we can. By making an off-site contribution, we believe the council will be able to use that money as it wishes to provide affordable housing. We are reasonably confident and sincerely hope that the scheme will do well enough to make the full £2 million contribution." Rod Humby, council leader, said, "I am pleased that Henderson has been able to take this approach, which means that if it is approved, the revised scheme will directly finance affordable housing in Winchester. I can confirm that the council as a landowner has not changed any of its financial arrangements with Henderson to achieve this." Planning policies require provision of 40% affordable housing, unless it can be demonstrated that such a level is unviable. The Chronicle revealed in August that Silver Hill is set to make a £15 million profit. Kim Gottlieb, City Councillor and leader of Winchester Deserves Better, which is campaigning against the scheme, said, "Henderson's U-turn proves two important things. The first is that the Winchester Deserves Better campaign is making a real impact. So well done to the great many who have written to the council and who demonstrated outside the Guildhall 3 weeks ago. Secondly, it provides proof of the abject drivel the people of Winchester are being sold. 18 months ago, we were told Henderson would provide 100 affordable homes on site, equivalent to £5 million off-site. Then 2 months ago, we were told they couldn't afford any at all. Today, we're told they can afford £2 million, sort of." Councillor Gottlieb added, "There can be no justification whatsoever in keeping all the financial details hidden away from public scrutiny. The sooner they're revealed, the sooner Winchester will get to the truth of this and of all the other awful impacts of this misconceived proposal."
And the second headline story, please, Noel.
Yes, the care home is still failing, a report says, but the new manager is praised for improvements. Winchester's St Cross Grange retirement home has failed another inspection into the care it provides for the elderly, who pay around £1,000 per week to live there. The Care Quality Commission, CQC, found that there had been significant improvements in the 3 months since their previous visit, after which its owners were issued with 5 warning notices for regulation breaches. But the inspector said more action was still required in the areas of care and welfare, medicine management, and the internal monitoring of the quality of service residents receive. Overall, we observed many improvements in the way people were cared for at the service, but there were some areas that needed further attention, the report said. After the legal warnings were issued to St Cross Grange's owner, Greensleeves Homes Trust, in July, Hampshire County Council stopped sending anyone in its care to live at the 64-bed facility. The CQC returned to make 2 unannounced spot checks in August. The recently published report into this latest visit praised the home's new manager, Susan Munro, for increasing the numbers of staff meetings, with one person describing her as brilliant. It also said elderly at the home in St Cross Road were treated in a kind, compassionate and friendly way by staff. However, the inspector observed that some of the changes made in areas such as medicine management and the weight monitoring earlier in the summer had not had enough time to properly bed in. People were not protected against the risks associated with medicines, her report noted. One person who had been losing weight when we visited in May 2014 showed an increase in August. However, we also found that it was not always clear what action was taken in response to identified weight loss. A Greensleeves Home Trust statement said the CQC's planned re-inspection of St Cross Grange in August confirms the significant improvements achieved within the home, defining the home as caring, compassionate and kind, and recognising that residents are happy living at the home. The new management team at the home continues to work with residents, staff and local authorities to embed the improvements achieved at the home. The current action plan has been developed in consultation with the CQC and local authority and aims to achieve full compliance by the end of December 2014.
And the third front page headline story, please, Jane.
And here we have cookery fans queue to meet Hugh. Dozens of people queued up, books at the ready, to meet River Cottage owner Hugh Fernley Whittingstall. The cook from Devon was at his new Abbey Mill restaurant to promote his new book, Light and Easy, this week. "I'm completely overwhelmed by the turnout," he said last Thursday. "It's fantastic. It's probably the most books I've ever done in one sitting. It's been tremendously busy, lots of people, many of whom live close and some of whom live further afield. Some of our readers have already eaten here. Either way, it's a big thumbs up." And there's a lovely photo of Hugh sitting at one of the tables in the restaurant with pen in hand and cup of tea at the ready, surrounded by a crowd of enthusiastic book readers holding their copies of the books, both male and female and old and young, and smiling broadly.
And that concludes our front page headline stories. Now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, Belgarum, and chronicle comment. And I'll start with the death notices. Barber, William James Russell Russ Barber, suddenly but peacefully at the Royal Cornwall Hospital, Trellisk, aged 72. Crook, Douglas Crook, in Extremadura, Spain, aged 71. Ogilvy, Joan Ogilvy of Alsford, formerly Joan French of Coldon Common, peacefully aged 91. Alton, Christopher Michael Lefroy Alton, peacefully at home, aged 55. Rie, Walter William John Rie, peacefully at home, aged 81. Simpkin, Patricia Ann Simpkin, peacefully at home, aged 71. And the last one, Vidow, Alan William Vidow, aged 95. And now we have Christian comment, read by Daphne.
This comes from Rosemary A. Baker. St. Luke's summer should be a healing time for all. A newspaper that I bought last week stated that after a week of storms and floods, we will have a heat wave. Falling last weekend, this is a St. Luke's summer, as October the 18th is celebrated in the Christian Church as St. Luke's Day. St. Luke was also one of the Gospel writers and wrote the Acts of the Apostles. He is believed to have been a Greek physician, possibly a slave, who was a companion of St. Paul. Luke's unique perspective on Jesus can be seen in the 6 miracles and 18 parables not found in the other Gospels. Luke's is the Gospel of the poor and of social justice. He is the one who tells the story of Lazarus and the rich man who ignored him. Luke is the one who uses "blessed are the poor" instead of "blessed are the poor in spirit" in the Beatitudes. Luke also has a special connection with the women in Jesus' life, especially Mary. It is only in Luke's Gospel that we hear the story of the Annunciation, Mary's visit to Elizabeth, including the Magnificat, the Presentation, and the story of Jesus' disappearance in Jerusalem. It is Luke that we have to thank for the scriptural parts of the Hail Mary. "Hail Mary, full of grace," spoken at the Annunciation, and "Blessed are you, and blessed is the fruit of your womb, Jesus," spoken by her cousin Elizabeth. Forgiveness and God's mercy to sinners is also of first importance to Luke. Only in Luke do we hear the story of the prodigal son welcomed back by the overjoyed father. Only in Luke do we hear the story of the forgiven woman disrupting the feast by washing Jesus' feet with her tears. Throughout Luke's Gospel, Jesus takes the side of the sinner who wants to return to God's mercy. Reading Luke's Gospel gives a good idea of his character as one who loved the poor, who wanted the door to God's kingdom open to all, who respected women, and who saw hope in God's mercy for everyone. St. Luke is considered to be the patron saint of doctors and surgeons, and many healing services and conferences are held at St. Luke's Tide. This week is also nowadays celebrated as One World Week, and fits well with both the season of harvest and the ideals espoused by St. Luke of both healing and supporting the poor and needy. These principles are needed for today's sick and fractured world, every bit as much as they were needed at the time of the early church. St. Luke is a saint for our time. From Rosemary A. Baker.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. The email address is news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, and the written address is the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. There are 10 letters this week, and we'll start with one read by Noel.
Yes, Rod Lawrence says, "Let's welcome our international students." Sir, I was pleased to read the articles by Andrew Napier and Charlotte Neal highlighting the contribution and needs of Chinese students in Winchester in the Chronicle, October 16th. Having received a warm welcome myself as an English teacher in China, I am very much aware of how the reception of students here can be comparatively cold. Surely we could do more to make Winchester a welcoming city. In my work with international students, I do occasionally hear stories about landlords who take advantage, but more often there is praise for kind, often elderly locals who will give directions to lost students or take the initiative to chat at a bus stop. Yet even more could be done by actively inviting Chinese students to participate in the life of the city. Friends International will link any international student with a volunteer, approved by their church leader, for at least one opportunity to experience a meal and chat inside a Winchester home. There are also trips where students have been delighted to meet the cows and sheep at a local farm or enjoy cream tea in a riverside garden. Students can apply to go further afield for an overnight stay through Host UK. Let's smile, chat, invite, and let our Chinese visitors know about these opportunities. Rod Lawrence, Croucher's Croft, Tegdown, Winchester.
And Ron Cassidy writes, Councillor stood up for her principles. Sir, Councillor Sue Nelms is absolutely correct to resign over the chaos about Silver Hill, more so having agreed the original plan, which included social housing and a new bus station, amongst other schemes. Chronicle, October the 16th. Councillor Izard should appreciate that she has stood up for her principles, not something that many councillors do, more so when they do not live in Winchester. She used to live on the periphery of Highcliffe, so was aware of the social housing need and also the need for a well-run, maintained and decent bus station. She is a regular bus user, so knows the mess the present one is in. The WCC's solution for this is not to have one. What this Tory-led council are pushing through is very regrettable. And that was from Ron Cassidy, Fifields Road, Highcliffe, Winchester.
And now, residents should have been consulted, and this comes from Jonathan Greatrix. Sir, some people think the new 20-mile-per-hour idea is a good one, and some don't. £90,000 spent is a horror in these tough times. The buses go as fast as ever to stick to their schedules. Following cars around town today, 30 miles per hour seemed the average on the open roads. What shocks me is the stupidity of the placing and size of these signs. The small section of Egbert Road spoiled by graffiti. It is not possible to do more than 20 here for the normal driver, and any Top Gear fool will aim to do so despite the sign. Just yards away is the junction with Hyde Street, and at the other end, homes. Blue Ball Hill, a short narrow section with a right-hand turning at one end and a river at the other. Really, are these supersized signs that necessary? I was on the Highcliffe Estate today. Again, 20-mile-per-hour signs on a short stretch, yards from the end of a cul-de-sac, and at the other short end a roundabout. Not only that, but the road is narrow and the cars parked partially obscure the signs as clearly as the cars were not there when the signs were painted. Can't the people living in these residential areas have a say? Some years ago, someone decided to grit and tar the pavements of Hyde. Why? It was utter hell for a year or more, with grit coming into homes and ruining carpets, wooden floors, etc. Please consult with those that live in these areas and improve their lives. Don't spoil their pretty environs. Can someone give me the name of the person responsible for the graffiti? And that comes from Jonathan Greatrix, Egbert Road, Hyde.
And here's an old friend, Phil Yates, also on the 20-mile-an-hour restriction. He says, 20-mile-per-hour restriction is a madcap idea, sir. So, the police will not enforce the new 20-mile-an-hour speed limit in the city's streets, which was recently introduced by our city council. Quite right, too. They have enough on their minds without trying to cope with an unnecessary additional problem. The city council should have consulted the police authority first before embarking on this madcap idea. But no, they have to desecrate our streets by painting these rather ugly signs, which inevitably will wear out in the main highway in due course with continual traffic passing over them. They've even painted side streets like Staple Gardens, where the traffic hardly ever travels more than 20 miles an hour. I disagree with my old friend Councillor Chris Pines for once when he states the system is working and speeds are coming down. I've news for him. On several occasions in the past week, I've witnessed traffic speeding up St George's Street and along Jury Street as if there was no tomorrow, doing at least 35 miles an hour, motorbikes even more. Another useless exercise by the City Council. Complete waste of time, labour and money, and I suppose the taxpayers' cost. Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
And a third letter about the 20-mile limit from J.B. McQuaid. No resources to enforce speed limit. Sir, further to your front page item about the 20-mile-per-hour speed zones not being enforced, I'm not in the least bit surprised. The police just do not have the resources to enforce any speed limit at the moment. We see horrendous accidents on the A34, which is the road to hell as far as speeding is concerned. In Twyford, residents keep calling for a pedestrian crossing on a dangerous road. Several junctions around Winchester are so bad they could do with a constant police presence at times. I don't know how the police cope after their 20% cut in resources. We expect too much from them. And that was from J.B. McCoy, Groves Close, South Wanston.
And now one from Rob Parker of the Winchester Green Party. Council is harming its citizens' health. Sir, in the recent BBC Inside Out programme, the leader of Winchester City Council, Rod Humby, asked us to put Winchester's air pollution in perspective. Asked why he had done nothing about meeting the required standards in 4 years, he claimed that we only break those standards occasionally at peak times. This statement is completely untrue. One would think after all these years that the leader of the council would know what the air pollution problem was. If he had read any of his officers' reports on the subject, he would know that the failure in Winchester was to meet standards throughout the year. Where does he get the idea that it is occasional, or only at peak times? The parameter of concern is the annual average level of NO2 gas. This is poisoning people who live and work in Winchester systematically and continuously. There is growing concern too on particulates, where the level of so-called PM10 emission in Winchester is rising. And on this measure alone, about 1.75 years of life expectancy is lost by those who live in it. Councillor Humby says he has a new traffic management plan. If he does, why doesn't he tell us what it is? At the moment, the only discernible plan is to make the problem much worse, specifically with the Silver Hill scheme, the lack of any intention of dealing with extra traffic from Barton Farm, and the recent parking strategy, seemingly designed to increase traffic in the centre. The City Council is breaking the law. It is harming the health of Winchester's citizens, and it is risking major financial penalties. Councillor Humby needs to get a grip on this. And that comes from Rob Parker, Winchester Green Party, Back Street, St Cross.
And Michael Cady brings us back to Silver Hill. He says Silver Hill proposals threaten the rest of the city. Sir, the proposed development at Silver Hill is quite wrong for Winchester and threatens to do irreparable damage to the cultural and economic life of the rest of the city. I see that in a recent briefing, Henderson's Director of Development, Martin Perry, attempted to frighten Winchester into accepting the Silver Hill scheme by comparing it to the successes of its rivals Basingstoke and Southampton. But do the people of Winchester really want their city to be like Basingstoke or Southampton? What Winchester offers, thank goodness, is a quite different experience from both Basingstoke and Southampton. Walk down the length of Winchester's main street from the Westgate to King Alfred, and you'll be in a mixed, interesting and busy place from top to bottom, with a brilliant mixture of buildings of all ages and types. Contrast that with Basingstoke, which had its historic town centre entirely demolished to make way for the ugly and characterless mall that dominates it today, and Southampton, much of the centre of which has had its soul and lifeblood sucked dry by vast malls and retail parks. The Silver Hill proposals, as they now stand, are entirely inappropriate, crass and money-grubbing, and should be opposed by everyone who cares about Winchester. Michael Cady, Up Somborne, Stockbridge.
And Councillor Rob Humby, as mentioned in a previous letter, has written, Belgarum should be watching the news. Sir, Belgarum, in the Chronicle October the 16th, clearly spends more time looking out of the window than watching the news. He managed to take a photograph of me being interviewed by the BBC in the street below his office, but must have missed the Inside Out programme that was being filmed. Had he seen the broadcast, Belgarum would not suggest that the city centre is amongst the most chronically polluted spots in Hampshire. As I explained in the interview, Winchester has a single air quality management area, and that exceeds recommended levels only on occasions. Much is being done to tackle the problem. Southampton, incidentally, has 8 air quality management areas. And that was from Councillor Rob Humby, leader of Winchester City Council.
And now a very short letter about the bus station. And this comes from Sally Eames. Have a look at the bus station's history. Have a look at Winchester, a pictorial history by Tom Beaumont James, also about King Alfred buses. It will tell you when the buses were started. The bus station has history. It needs to be upgraded, not flattened. And that comes from Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
And here from Karen Barrett we have, in support of public sector strike action. Sir, your Vox Pop question on October the 16th, do you support health workers' strike action? My answer, a resounding yes, which I backed up by joining the picket line at the Royal County Hampshire Hospital in Winchester. In recent months, I've also supported striking teachers and attended national demonstrations, largely unreported, in London, in support of public services and the people who work in them. Our public sector workers do not take such action lightly, but what are they supposed to do, faced not only with a deterioration in their pay and conditions, but also the undermining through creeping privatisation of the very services to which they are so dedicated and on which all of us depend? How dare anyone accuse them of selfishness or shirking their duties? Trades union members are also members of the public with families just as likely to be impacted by industrial action as anyone else. Now the Conservatives are threatening to impose further restrictions on the right to strike. Such policies are undemocratic and must be resisted. And if it means standing or marching in the rain, that's what I'll be doing. And that was from Karen Barrett, Byron Avenue, Winchester.
And that concludes all of our letters to the editor for this week. Thank you to everybody who contributed. It's time for your say. Passers-by in the Winchester area were asked, was it right that Winchester City Council removed the benches from King's Walk following antisocial behaviour? Noel has the answers.
Well, the answers come first from Talla Bright, 18, full-time mum of Cromwell Road, Stanmore, said, we were using the benches quite a lot. It looks plain now, it's a bit rubbish. You can always sit on the fountain, but it's going to get crowded. And another full-time mum, Becky Woolner, 23, of Winnall Manor Road, Winnall, said, it's a good idea. It'll stop people hanging around. They all used to talk to my daughter. I don't think it was a problem, but they're somewhere else now. And Harry Daly, 19, unemployed, of St Giles Hill, said, it's bad that drunken abusive behaviour happens here and some people come round asking about where the benches are and they're told it's because of this behaviour. It gives a bad reputation to this area. And Brian Powell, 79, retired of Wainfleet Place, Stanmore, said, I think they should have kept them here. It's because it's the only place you can sit is on the stone. I hope it will improve the area.
And now we're going back through the mists of time into our records for historical news items from our files, starting with 25 years ago, read by Daphne.
And this is October the 27th, 1989. Council gives site to Car Gom. Despite objections from residents at Wavell Way, Stanmore, Winchester City Council decided last week to dispose of a site to the Winchester Car Gom Society. The Car Gom Society intends to build a home for lonely people at the rear of Wavell Way and Summers Close, and subject to being able to obtain planning consent, the Housing Committee approved this. The committee also recommended that they would seek to ensure 50% nomination rights, the replacement of all existing garages, and additional landscaping works to the existing garage court. Royal Hampshire County Hospital has had to close its doors to some emergency cases, it was revealed this week. This has happened occasionally in the past year because the hospital already had too many patients. Mr. Mike James, spokesman for Winchester Health Authority, explained, it has happened because we have run out of beds. We occasionally have had to close. If we close the hospital, then cases go to Basingstoke or Southampton. But it is a pretty rare occurrence. It has happened at Basingstoke and Southampton too.
Now again, back to Noel for 50 years ago.
October the 24th, 1964. There are two items. The first has a headline, Special Meeting for 5-Day Shopping. Proposals for a 5-day shopping week in Winchester will be before the Chamber of Commerce at a special meeting in the Guildhall on Wednesday. Several shops have already made a move towards five-day week, and the prime object of the meeting will be to see whether a satisfactory scheme can be worked out that will avoid confusion to the public from shops closing on different days. And the second item, a proposal to alter school holiday arrangements as from the end of the current term was scrapped by Hampshire County Council Education Committee at Winchester on Thursday. The ultimate aim of the proposals was that the Christmas and Easter holidays should be shortened and the summer vacation lengthened so that parents could stagger their holiday arrangements and not necessarily be tied to August. It was agreed to reject the proposals, which are now to be the subject of negotiation between the various teaching bodies and a special subcommittee.
Jane's going back 100 years ago.
And 100 years ago, two items, a dramatic time, of course, October the 24th, 1914. Enemy had been driven back 13 kilometres. The Paris official communique dealing with the route of the Germans, reported on Thursday, announces that the advance of the Russian armies shows an important success in the Warsaw region. The enemy has been driven back for a distance of 13 kilometres. From the same source, it is reported that the Russians have made also appreciable progress at Ivangorod and to the south of Przemysl. The force now beaten is Germany's best army against Russia, and the whole German army north of the Pilitsa River is in full retreat, hard pressed by the Russians. And secondly, up to Monday, 780,000 men have responded to Earl Kitchener's appeal for 1 million men to bear arms for king and country. It is only a little more than 2 months since the appeal was made. Subject to the consent of the War Office, a new regiment is to be raised in Bedfordshire for the purpose of supplying the wastage in the Bedfordshire Regiment.
Finally, Daphne is going back 200 years.
And this is from October the 24th, 1814. Luddites continue with outrages. We are sorry to learn from Nottingham that the outrages of those deluded people called Luddites still continue. A few weeks ago, a man of the name of Towle of New Basford was fully committed for frame-breaking upon the evidence of Mr. Garton of that place. Aware that the evidence of Mr. Garton could not fail to bring their accomplice to condign punishment, the Luddites formed the horrid resolution of murdering him. On arriving at Mr. Garton's house and forcing their way into the parlour where the constables were waiting for them, the Luddite ringleader received a shot in his head and dropped down dead on the spot. And now a complete change of subject. On Monday evening, an immense vat of the brewery of Messrs. Henry Mewkes and Company, containing 3,555 barrels of porter, burst with great impetuosity through the brew house. So great was the force of the explosion that the bricks of the brew house were thrown over the tops of the houses of Russell Street into that street. Two houses in New Street, adjoining the brew house, were totally demolished. One man was taken out dead, and another died after he was extricated. About 6 o'clock, three persons were rescued with great difficulty by people who had to wade up to their middle through the beer.
And back to the present. First person this week is by Khalid Aziz and is read by Noel.
Yes, Khalid Aziz heads his piece Worthy Disability. Talking about the worth of disabled people is a dubious activity, and no doubt Lord Freud deeply regrets his infelicitous use of the word when engaging with a Conservative councillor from Tunbridge Wells on the profoundly worthy question of how to provide more disabled people with opportunities to work. The exchange has been mired in political point scoring, but it has got people thinking about this thorny subject. At Enham Trust, the charity I have the honour of leading, we provide scores of employment opportunities for those with disabilities through our packaging and storage business at Enham Alamein, just north of Andover, and at our furniture-making facility in Eastleigh. The jobs are real, worthwhile, and to judge by those you meet in our factories, enjoyable. We pay above the minimum wage and we make a profit, but it's not easy. Disabled people are no different to anyone else when it comes to work. Some are keen to work, taking a pride in their efforts. Some need to be given the self-belief that they can work, and Enham Trust has an enviable track record in opening up such possibilities to those with both physical and mental disabilities. We call it the power of yes. If yes is the answer, we simply have to ask the right questions. It has to be said, too, that some disabled people do not want to work, but most do, and often they can move on from Enham into a mainstream business. Job design for the disabled often follows the Marxist principle, from each according to his ability to each according to his needs. Indeed, the job's packaging, for example, tins of sweets for Christmas or speciality teas for the likes of Twinings and Fortnum and Mason, are oriented to what our people can achieve. The work is often repetitive, and for some with certain mental disabilities, this is positively an advantage. However, overall, there is no doubt that, by definition, a group of disabled people would be less productive than those of normal abilities. Our customers, while benign, expect us to be competitive, and this is tough, especially when we're pitched against the low wages of the Far East and Eastern Europe. Although, ironically, a rich seam of work for us lies in reworking packaging mistakes originally perpetuated in China and Poland. We also expect to make a profit. That's where self-respect lies. As a business, we can increase productivity through some automation, although we don't want the machinery to cut employment opportunities. As a charity, we can employ able-bodied volunteers who give a few hours a week to augment the efforts of the disabled full-timers. It is unreasonable to expect ordinary businesses still struggling out of recession to be hectored by grandstanding politicians. Such businesses do have a role to play if they are able and will no doubt want to help. Charities such as Enham Trust can and are more than willing to take a lead.
Now, Jane's got an alternative look at the news with Belgarum Diary.
And Belgarum has five little alternative looks at the news this week. Firstly, rival Steel Spotlight. Winchester and Salisbury are often considered in the same sentence cities with some similarities. But this week, the Wiltshire City certainly stole a march on its Hampshire rival. It was named one of the Lonely Planet Guide's cities to visit in 2015, along with Vienna and Milan. Apparently, the editors were impressed by the 800th anniversary of the signing of the Magna Carta. There are only four left, and the best preserved is in Salisbury Cathedral. Secondly, legal whiz to leave city. Divorce lawyer to the stars, Aisha Vardag, is to quit Winchester. The legal whiz, who has rented a Queen Anne home in the Cathedral Close for the past 4 years, will probably move from the city next month, with her PR spokeswoman confiding in Belgarum that she now intends to split her time between Dubai, Italy and London. Aisha Vardag caused a stir in Winchester when she remarried in the cathedral in June. The 46-year-old, who naturally signed a prenup agreement with her new husband, Stephen, stunned guests with her flame-coloured wedding dress. And then plans passed for Deputy PM's bro. The brother of the Deputy Prime Minister, Nick Clegg, has got the thumbs up for some improvements at his home near Winchester. City Council planners last week permitted Paul Clegg's application to rebuild a collapsed boundary wall at his home in Littleton. And apostrophe pedants wondering if Lindsay and Dell got married. Belgarum always gets niggly about iffy grammar and downright twitchy when it doesn't know what the heck's going on. It's probably something to do with controlling issues and the inner pedant. For the past few weeks, a brown arrow sign has been posted on the junction of London Road and the A33 by the Cart and Horses Inn, pointing towards Alsford, with the enticing words, Lindsay and Dell's Wedding, and that is Dell's without an apostrophe. When it first appeared, Belgarum secretly battled the urge to stop the car and turned Dell's D-E-L-S into Dell's D-E-L apostrophe S, in the apostrophe-obsessed way you would expect of a newspaper. Now, as the time ticks on, we're worried that the nuptials haven't taken place or that the subsequent partying was so full-on it's rendered all the guests bedbound ever since. Either way, we'd like to know, just in case there's a story there. And finally, White Line takes a break for roadkill. A dead animal by the side of the A272 at Gander Down. Nothing unusual in that, you may think. But the death coincided with the repainting of the carriageway after recent resurfacing work. The White Line workman has carefully avoided painting over the remains, unlike some other instances reported in the national press. But would it have been too difficult to have carefully used a spade to pick up the corpse and gently place it on the verge before carrying on? And this is accompanied by a photograph of the grey tarmac road next to the grass, with the white line down the edge of the tarmac, which stops, at which point there is the remains of a dead body of a small animal, and then it starts again immediately after the dead body, which presumably won't be there that long.
We've got four items for What's On this week. On Thursday, October the 30th, there's a free half-hour lunchtime talk by Councillor Jackie Porter at the Winchester Hampshire County Record Office in Sussex Street. And it's called To Honour a Promise, and it's the first World War camps at Mourne Hill. It starts at 1:15 p.m. and goes on to 1:45 p.m. As I said before, there's no charge, and there's no need to book, but if you want to talk to Councillor Jackie Porter about it, 01962 846 154. The Romsey Choral Society is putting on some music called We Will Remember Them. It's music for remembrance by Ralph Vaughan Williams, George Dyson and Paul Van Gulik. It's with the Southern Symphonia. It's on Saturday the 8th of November at 7:30 p.m. in Romsey Abbey. For tickets, you can visit www.romseychoral.org.uk. And the next couple of items are at Portsmouth Guildhall. For jazz lovers, is one of the UK's finest jazz vocalist, Jackie Dankworth, in the Live Lounge on 6th of November. And the next musical item there is the Glenn Miller Orchestra on Sunday the 9th of November. And they're both at the Portsmouth Guildhall, and you can book tickets by going online to www.portsmouthguildhall.org.uk, or you can phone 0844 847-2362. Lighting Up Time ends on Friday the 24th of October at 7:40 a.m. and begins at 5:49 p.m. Now, clocks go back 1 hour at midnight the 25th of October. So, on Wednesday the 29th of October, Lighting Up Time ends at 6:49 a.m. and begins at 4:39 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. And now we've got editorial comment read by Daphne.
And this is on a topic that has already been mentioned: council surrenders to antisocial behaviour. The City Council's removal of benches outside King's Walk in Winchester is slightly baffling, as well as being wrong. The four seats were becoming a magnet for antisocial behaviour, including drunkenness, urinating and swearing. The area was a regular spot for police enforcement. But instead of tackling the issue itself, the council has overreacted and removed the seats, thus depriving members of the public of a useful place to rest. The only thing achieved is to have moved the problem a few yards, with the group of troublemakers now gathering in the entrance to the King's Walk arcade. In the summer, the problem will move on to Abbey Gardens. Will the council remove the seats from there? The council's action, taken after consultation with the police, is a form of surrender to antisocial behaviour. Over the last 20 years, the problem has ebbed and flowed, with certain people moving to the city and then either moving on or changing their ways and improving their lot. In all likelihood, the same would happen this time. The council should instead try harder to help the people who are causing the problem, better encouraging them to seek the services such as the Trinity Centre, Night Shelter or other agencies.
And now we're going to continue with further items of general news, starting with one read by Noel.
And here's the news item that actually explains that Hampshire Chronicle comment and one or two of the letters in the Chronicle. This is benches removed after antisocial behaviour, but councillor says this does not solve the problem. Benches have been stripped from a popular Winchester meeting place after a spate of violence and antisocial behaviour. Businesses around King's Walk told police that a gang of loiterers was urinating, vomiting and smearing tomato ketchup on the benches. Ian Ball, manager of a nearby indoor market, said the group sold drugs and intimidated would-be customers for years. "You name it, they've been doing it out there," he said. "The police are here every 5 minutes. Everyone that walks down here asks, 'Oh, that must be horrible for you.' We still get it now a little bit." The rabble still disrupts trade by congregating under a nearby awning when it rains, he added. The seats were removed by the council this month after escalating problems in King's Walk. A council spokesman said the group caused trouble, sitting on all the benches every afternoon. But Councillor Dominic Hiscock said removing public amenities would not solve the real issue of antisocial behaviour. He said the trouble is that those people won't go away. Those people are now going to go somewhere else. What we're gradually getting now is an erosion of places to sit and enjoy the city. It was used very highly by a number of elderly people waiting for buses. It's a pity. I'm not convinced that that was the right answer. The council worked with police and local businesses to address the complaints. Sandra Tuddenham, head of community safety, said, "We're still dealing with those individuals. We're patrolling the area robustly. We feel that we've made the right decision because businesses are thanking us. If we had had a number of complaints, we might have considered putting them back, but we've only had one."
And now we have thousands create new art display, development decorated with old memories. Over 3,000 people from a Winchester estate have come together to create a new community project at the site of 21 new homes. Stanmore residents have delved through their photo albums to find memories from days gone by, which are now displayed on decorative boards on the hoardings of the new Queen's Head development. They will be there for 18 months, reminding residents of the history of their estate. Artist Lawrence Dew Brushby has spent months working with the community to put the project together. At the official unveiling last Wednesday, she said, "I think it's lovely to see people pointing at the photos and telling stories, and I hope that people are going to keep talking about it. It has been really interesting, and I've spent time immersing myself in this place in the community. We have had about 3,000 people engage with the project on Facebook. Some 30 people crowded around the 8 boards, laughing and finding themselves in the pictures. Gwen Dyke, 77, retired of Stanmore Lane, said she could spot herself dressed as Snow White in 1945 at a party to celebrate the end of the Second World War. "The project is wonderful," she said. "Lawrence has worked so hard, and it's such a good idea. It's made everybody look about and find things. I sent some pictures from my gran in. So many people have been interested." Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, unveiled the boards and also praised Lawrence's work. She said, "This project has been the brainchild of Lawrence and the City Council, and it is something you should all be very proud of. It has captured the essence of Stanmore. What is going on in the new Queen's Head's place is something absolutely wonderful for the community and that you represent, and that is houses for people who need them. The new Queen's Head site will provide 21 homes, which Councillor Steve Miller said should be completed by spring 2016. And it's accompanied by two photos, one of the mayor with a whole lot of people looking and finding their photos on the board, and another of Gwen Dyke, as was mentioned, at the 1945 end of the map of Stanmore Lane, covered with black and white photos and a picture of herself next to her in her snow-white outfit.
Public consultation to be held on draft plan. The Winchester public will have their first chance to have their say on the crucial local plan that will shape development over the next 2 decades. The council has agreed for public consultation on the draft plan. Councillors raised numerous controversial issues that will be thrashed out before the local plan part 2 goes before an inspector at a public inquiry in 2015. It includes the need for the district to find sites for houses. The meeting heard that many villages were happy with the public consultation. In Alsford, an alternative plan is being worked up by residents because they are unhappy about the proposal for 320 houses on land off Sun Lane. But former Mayor Barry Lipscomb said, "Lots of parish councils have expressed satisfaction at the way they have been consulted." Deputy Council Leader Victoria Weston said there had been consultation for 20 months. At Alsford, Councillor Simon Cook said if Sun Lane fell through, then other sites in the town would have to be used. Other suggested sites include off the Avenue, the Dean and New Farm Road. Councillor Harry Verney, who represents Cheriton and Bishop Sutton, said he knew of a developer wanting to build 60 to 70 homes near Alsford. He declined later to reveal where. In Wickham, the proposed development at Wellbourne outside Fareham was pushing people to oppose new house building.
Old organ rescued from scrap heap. Victorian instrument restored to former glory. The wardens of Oslebury Church pulled out all the stops to rescue a 150-year-old vintage wooden organ from the scrap heap. The Victorian instrument was discovered on auction site eBay earlier this year, and faced an uncertain future until church organist Colin Harvey persuaded St Andrews to support his rescue plan. After months of fundraising and renovations, the organ has been restored to its former glory and has been officially unveiled. Mr Harvey said, "The organ is just the right size, so it was a rare opportunity. I then had to persuade the church wardens to support my harebrained idea, and I thank them greatly for their support." The Reverend Jonah Watts added, "St Andrews has been blessed with the opportunity to obtain this recycled organ, and we are very grateful for the work of all those who have brought the instrument back to life and to the church. This king of instruments will inspire us and certainly contribute greatly to our worship." The organ was originally installed in the Primitive Methodist Church, Farnham, in 1915, and was moved to Emmanuel Church, Farnham, in 1936. Emmanuel Church tried to sell it on eBay in 2013 and would have thrown it in a skip if they had not found a buyer. There was interest from Italy, Denmark, Germany, the US and Holland. Mr Harvey said, "We'd been looking for an organ for a while, so acted quickly and secured it for the village church. Our old electric action organ had been failing." The organ was restored by Jeff Griffiths. The bellows were re-leathered and the handle for hand-blowing restored to full operational order. The casework was restored to its original finish and all the mechanisms cleaned and overhauled. The brass desk-light above the music stand was rescued from Winchester Recycling Centre by Mr Harvey. The church was given a grant of £6,500 from Church Care, the Church Buildings Council, to help fund the purchase and restoration. And this is accompanied with a lovely photograph, colour photograph, of the organ in its place, looking really clean and spick and span, and a lot of members of the congregation, both old and young, standing in front of it, all smiling, members of the Osbury congregation with the Reverend Jonah Watts and Colin Harvey.
And now we have flood barriers may be constructed, new ideas considered to protect city. Floods, which submerged parts of Winchester last winter, could be limited in future as environmental bosses plan permanent flood barriers for the city. Some of the city's most vulnerable areas could be protected by new defences as emergency teams look to improve their response. The Environment Agency and local councils are considering erecting permanent barriers on Water Lane and Park Avenue, which were underwater for days in February. The watertight walls, likely to be made of concrete or brick, would be up to a metre in height, but would take several months to introduce because permanent structures require planning permission. The agency is also planning to upgrade a sluice at the north end of Park Avenue. Andrew Gillam, flood and coastal risk manager, said groundwater levels around Winchester are lower than they were 2 years ago, but another wet winter could see a repeat of February's floods. If we saw the same amount of rain we saw last winter, then it's highly likely we will be looking at very similar conditions again, he said. We are ready to roll out the same emergency response, but the experience of last year should help us. He called on communities to set up action groups and prepare their homes in case extreme weather returns. Hampshire County Council spent £1.6 million on defence repairs after this year's floods. Councillor Sean Woodward, executive member of the Environment, said multi-agency response controlled by the council would keep Winchester safer, particularly in small villages where communication is harder. Most of Hampshire is rural, and the vast majority of the Winchester district is rural, he said. We have a much, much better relationship with the agencies that matter. We can call the Environment Agency, we can call the Army, we can call the Navy, and we have.
Police headquarters site contaminated. Hampshire Police's sale of its White Elephant headquarters in Chandler's Ford has been hit by a new embarrassment. Alpha Park is built on contaminated former industrial land, and the potential deal has been delayed while work is done to clean up the site. It was bought for £9.8 million in 2008 and sold at a loss in January to an undisclosed buyer, subject to a survey. The nature of the pollution is unclear. The building stood empty for over 6 years and by May 2013 had cost £1.8 million just to maintain and keep secure. John Apter, chairman of Hampshire Police Federation, which represents rank-and-file officers, said last night, "It is an embarrassment. I was relieved when Simon Hayes, in one of the first things he did as police and crime commissioner, decided to sell it. It is on contaminated land, and we are going to have to pay to decontaminate. If it wasn't so serious, it would be funny. It just goes to show we should never have bought the site." The force bought the site after deciding to sell its 1960s headquarters in Romsey Road, Winchester. It is looking to downsize its headquarters to Mottisfont Court, a former county council office on High Street, Winchester.
Ex-army officer and MBE dies aged 94. A retired army officer who was made an MBE for his work with Winchester's Workers Education Association has died aged 94. Robert French lived in the city for 35 years and was a well-known cathedral guide. But he rarely spoke of his war record, which saw him take part in fierce fighting in India and Burma. He's survived by one of his sons, John, but was predeceased by both Joan, his wife of almost 60 years, and their son, Paul. Lieutenant Colonel French was born in Wales and grew up in a happy, loving household, though one where money was so tight his mother took in soldiers' washing. One of the key childhood influences was his sister, Winnie, whose sudden death in 1937, coupled with that of his mother at around the same time, were losses from which he is said to have never fully recovered. Given the difficulties finding a job in the deep 1930s recession, French opted for an army career. Woolwich Barracks was a tough and lonely place for a boy soldier, yet he came to see the military as an alternative family, which provided him with a sense of security. On the outbreak of war in 1939, the then 20-year-old was sent to France with the Royal Artillery, where he and his comrades awaited Hitler's invading army in vain. Sent home for 2 weeks' leave after without firing a shot, French slipped on the stairs at Charing Cross Station, breaking his ankle. The injury left him unable to return to his unit, and he was later transferred to the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers on its formation in 1942. French went on to command a light aid detachment of Sherman tanks and was involved in the advance on Rangoon, which resulted in the surrender of Japanese forces in 1945. He was presented at the official surrender with a Japanese officer's sword, which was kept by him until his admission to residential care. French returned from the war gaunt and having developed a duodenal ulcer, which he treated with a diet of raw eggs and milk. But his life took a significant change for the better in 1947, when he met and married his wife Joan. They were stationed in occupied Berlin in the 1950s, then Singapore, before the then Lieutenant Colonel completed his army career as the officer in command of the publications centres in Woolwich and Andover. French and his family moved to Winchester in 1977, and on his retirement from the army in 1982, he became Deputy Appeals Director for the Trelawa Trust, a charity that works with young disabled people. He then joined the Winchester Committee of the Workers' Education Association, serving as their chairman for over 10 years. In recognition of this work with the WEA and his contribution to adult education in Winchester, he became an MBE at the age of 84. "This award was one of the proudest achievements of his life," said son John. "For all his achievements, from his humble origins in Pembroke Dock, Dad was never boastful or arrogant. Neither did he conform to the stiff upper-lipped image of an army officer." Lieutenant Colonel French's funeral took place at St Cross Church following his death in August.
And here we have latest figures show boom in city's tourism. Tourism is booming in Winchester, with the number of visitors rocketing. Councillor leader Rob Humby told full council that new figures showed that numbers had reached 5.5 million in 2013. The growth in day visitors was rising by 9% compared to 6.5% previously. The value of tourism was a whopping £341 million, £100 million or 42% more than in 2008. Councillor Humby said the success was due to partnership between the City Council, East Hampshire District Council, the South Downs National Park and Tourism South East. Head of Tourism, Ellen Simpson, said, "There is an increase in staying the night, which is brilliant news. Nationally, there is a decline in day trips, but from 2012 to 2013, we had gone up by 12%, which is extraordinary. 20 years ago, people used to go for five-day breaks. Now it's shorter because of time pressures such as work and people's lifestyle. By about 2010-2011, we started to see a trend where people stopped taking staycations and started doing nano breaks. The number of day visitors increased by 34% to 5.4 million over a five-year period between 2008 and 2013. In 2013, these day visitors spent a staggering £194.4 million, up £22.6 million from the previous year. Supervisor at Maison Blanc, Rebecca Lee, said, "The Christmas period is by far our busiest period. By about mid-November to the third week of January, tourists are constantly queuing at the door. We're the first place with toilets and hot drinks, and we're doing incredibly well. We get lots of Germans, and in the summer months we get a lot of Italian students because it's such a convenient place. It's definitely increased, that much is obvious. The first year I worked here it seemed like mayhem, then last year we were a bit more organised and we had to get three more people from other stores to help us out and not just from Maison Blanc." Miss Lee said, "The cafe also keeps two extra coffee machines spare just to keep up with the extra demand at Christmas time." Ava Krajolisova, sales assistant at Char, said, "Through the summer we have more tourists from other countries than local customers. It's mainly people from Germany and Italy. I don't think local people think of tea in the summer." Miss Simpson added, "It's also sustaining more jobs. The number of tourism jobs recorded in 2013 was 5,380, up nearly 1,000 from 2008. We must be doing something right."
Dinner dance for anniversary. Community Centre marks 60th. It has been 60 years since the final touches were made to a Hampshire community centre, and now the locals have celebrated the milestone birthday. In true 1950s fashion, a black tie dinner dance was held to mark the anniversary, including a performance from the Spitfire Sisters and their six-piece band. Week Community Centre in Winchester is run by volunteers, and caters for all age groups with local clubs and societies based there. Gary Parfitt, 68, of Taplings Road, was among those who helped build it. He said, "I was up there when I was just 8 years old. It's always been a happy memory for me because my friends and relatives come up there and we always have a great time. It is so well run." The retired railway worker said he would often go to the centre with his mother, Ruth, now 92, and his father, William, who passed away 7 years ago. At the dance, he was joined by other members who helped build it, and Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry. Organisers collected donations for the raffle from Costa Coffee, Waitrose, Coral and Winchester Automatics. Centre manager Gemma North said, "We would like to thank the North Winchester Community Church for all their help in preparation, local businesses and the previous and current committee, and all the members for continuing to support the centre. It was a great evening and everyone had a great time. Here's to another 60 years. The dinner dance was on Saturday, October the 18th.
Changes after patient death. Winchester's Royal Hampshire County Hospital has changed several aspects of its inpatient care after an Ulsterbury pensioner died of a head injury. All those prescribed with the drug furosemide, which causes blood pressure to dip, are now categorised as being at high risk of falling, and any patient who incurs a head injury is immediately given a CT scan of their brain. Tuesday's inquest heard how Heather Glasspool, 71, died on January the 27th, a month after she fell over while a patient on Clark Ward. A post-mortem examination concluded that she had sustained a large fatal bleed on her brain when she hit her head. The pathologist also found that she had suffered from heart disease and contracted pneumonia shortly before her death. Staff nurse Lucy Coleman told the inquest how Mrs. Glasspool had collapsed onto the linoleum floor and lost consciousness after walking to the nurse's station to return a pen on the afternoon of December the 22nd. "I went to put my pen back in my pocket and then heard her hit the floor," she said. "She was on her back when I came round from the nurse's station. I think she was unconscious for about 10 seconds. Staff nurse Coleman said that as a result of the incident, Mrs. Glasspool of Beech Grove, Ulsterbury, was immediately recategorised as being at a high risk of falling. However, a CT scan, which showed she had suffered a major brain bleed, did not take place until the next day. Mrs. Glasspool was then taken to Southampton's neurosurgical unit to have the injury drained, but she later died. A statement by Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust Divisional Medical Director of Medical Services, Dr. Carl Brooks, which was read to the inquest, said that the care at the Winchester and Basingstoke hospitals had been redefined as a result. "In future, a CT scan will be done immediately," he added. Other changes include the reclassification of anyone on furosemide as being at high risk of falling and regularly taking the blood pressure of patients lying down and standing up. Recording a narrative verdict, senior Central Hampshire coroner Graham Short said that hospital falls were inevitable given that so many patients are elderly. A statement from Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust issued after the inquest said, "We would like to express our sincere condolences to Mrs. Glasspool's family and friends. We have learned from this incident and have implemented changes as a result."
And now students feel like they are scapegoats. Dispute over antisocial behaviour on estate. Students in Stanmore have rejected claims that their growing presence threatens all-out war with the residents. A petition with more than 320 signatures said that the council estate is at breaking point with students who cause antisocial behaviour, criminal damage, overflowing bins and parties keeping children awake at night. But Winchester University students said they feel like scapegoats for problems caused by local residents and a minority of their peers. "First years are much more inclined to go out," said Abby Johnson, a liberal arts student living in Cromwell Road. "We're all being blamed. I don't think it was this bad last year, it's just too many people." She said students were also scapegoats for crazy, crazy loud music coming from a nearby family house. Student and neighbour Guy Kirk Lynch said, "We get emails from the uni and our landlords telling us to keep the noise down. They said the complaint was at 2 o'clock in the morning. We weren't even here. The long-standing tensions have resurfaced in recent weeks, with residents and students agreeing that the disruption has escalated this term. The university's record intake and a lack of campus accommodation has pushed some freshers into private houses, ordinarily rented by older students. City Councillor Derek Green, who lives on Battery Hill in Stanmore, said, "I don't think it's all the students. I live on Stanmore Estate and I'm surrounded by 8 or 9 student properties and I've not had one single problem. They're all getting tarred with the same brush because there are 1 or 2 bad apples. It's so unfair." Petition creator Amanda Chard of Drayton Street said trouble from locals was manageable, but the growing student population has upset the balance of the community. "The petition is about addressing an imbalance," she said. "This isn't about demonising students." But she stood by her comments that the estate faced all-out war if tensions went unresolved. "I think if something isn't done, that's eventually what will happen," she said. "I'm terrified of that happening." Her petition calls on councillors to bring forward a proposed clampdown on family homes being converted into house shares, which are popular with students.
Marathon in memory of Wine Lover. Wine lovers from Winchester have just completed a wine-themed marathon in France to raise money for a cancer charity. Lynn Cox, her brother-in-law David Cox, and their friends have raised over £16,000 by running the Médoc Marathon in Bordeaux for the Vintners Foundation. They ran in aid of Lynn's husband and David's twin brother, Michael Cox, a Ropley-based master vintner who died from cancer last year, aged 62. David's team set off from Pauillac recently in aid of the two charities which were particularly close to Michael's heart. Miss Cox of Vicarage Lane said, "It was an amazing weekend, a unique and very emotional experience with great camaraderie among the team members. We all ran with a photo of Michael attached to our shirts. I think it's fair to say that every one of us found the course very tough, particularly in the heat, but the fact that we all completed it was a testament to Michael. There was simply no way that we were not going to finish something we had started in his honour. I am so thrilled that so many people have donated so generously in his memory, and that Michael continues to inspire us to work together on behalf of the wine trade which he loved so much." Saturday Kitchen wine experts Peter Richards and Susie Barry from Winchester were part of the group. In his report of events, Mr. Richards said, "This endeavour was all about Michael Cox. Celebrating our dear friend who died too soon was why we ran the marathon. Team Cox was emblazoned on our running shirts. We all had a photo of Michael, striking a typically flamboyant pose, poignant in black and white, that went on the course with us." And there are two pictures, one of the Saturday Kitchen wine experts in their running gear, their marathon gear, and running along in absolutely glorious sunshine through great bunches of balloons for some reason. And then we have Lynn Cox and her brother-in-law, her husband's twin, again smiling away in the sunshine, in the balloons, looking very happy.
Art school hindered by shortage of land. Expansion plans are on hold, says the head. Winchester School of Art is looking to take more students, but is constrained by a lack of land, according to its head. Ed D'Souza said the school is at maximum capacity, and expansion plans are on hold until it can acquire more land. "If that becomes a possibility in future," he said, "then we have got a chance to expand. There's a lot more research that needs to be done on what there is in a market that can grow. It's more about where we would broaden our curriculum," he said. "We're looking to grow as much diversity as possible." The school, which is run by Southampton University, may restructure to take on a higher proportion of British students. The number of foreign scholars at the school has risen dramatically in recent years, while British applications have dwindled since the tuition fee hike in 2012. He offered no comment when asked how many students he would like to take, but Professor Mark Spearing, Pro-Vice-Chancellor International of Southampton University, said he would like to see half of its students come from overseas. Last week, the Hampshire Chronicle revealed that the School of Arts Chinese intake had soared from 5 to 575 in 7 years. Southampton University brings in about £23 million a year from Chinese students, 5% of its £450 million turnover. But cultural differences mean many scholars struggle to make friends with British students. Mr. D'Souza said, "The university is always working on ways to integrate foreign students into communities. One of the things we did many years ago was develop particular staff who are just there to support international students fully prior to coming. They help them to make new friends and create support systems. That's a really important extra we got to do to help integrate the students. We're talking about international education, and you can only do that if you have students coming from around the world," he added. Winchester has become a sort of international destination. Ping Hua, research scientist at the university and chair of Chinese Arts Southampton, explained the attraction of the UK. "England has a reputation in terms of education. I think it is very much about the course structure. If you do a postgraduate degree in China, it takes 3 years, but here it's only one. I'm going on a recruitment trip soon to Beijing and Shanghai. The Chinese government provides scholarships for top students. My work is with them, and we know they are top, and we want good students to come here." Andy Lai, vice chairman of the Chinese Association of Southampton and former Hong Kong policeman, said that 5 years ago, when more students started coming over, there were a lot of incidents.
And now fears aired over Silver Hill scheme. BID members have mixed feelings. Fears for the impact on Winchester of a proposed Silver Hill scheme were aired at a meeting for local businesses. Around 60 members of the Business Improvement District attended a briefing by Henderson on Tuesday, October the 14th, on their latest plans to hear the developers say the scheme would secure Winchester's commercial future. Henderson intends to alter a scheme which got planning permission in 2009 by dropping a bus station and 100 affordable housing units. Instead, there will be more retail floor space and 177 homes, fewer but bigger in size. The attitude of BID members to the £165 million scheme remains mixed. Leslie Carr of Bulltaup Kitchen Shop and BID Forum chairman said, "I think the scheme is fantastic. It far exceeds my expectations." Last month, more than 40 BID members signed an open letter opposing the BID's support for the scheme. They are worried that Silver Hill could undermine the High Street. Tony Wyman of Childhood's Dream Toy Shop said at the meeting at the Wessex Hotel that if Silver Hill succeeds, it will create parking problems as the City Council proposes to allow building on car parks in Upper Brook Street and Cheswell Street and remove parking from the centre at the Broadway. He called on the Council to construct a multi-storey car park on Middle Brook Street and synchronise its completion with Silver Hill. Chris Downing of Winchester Investment Solutions questioned whether 180 private parking spaces were enough for 177 homes, including 81 three-bedroom units. Chris Turner, BID director, said a lack of parking was the price of living in a city centre. The developers assured the audience that it would boost the city. Martin Perry, director of development at Henderson, said it would protect Winchester from West Quay, Whiteley and Basingstoke, where a John Lewis will open in 2015. Mr. Perry said, "We believe town centres are sustainable and we should be making extra effort to invest in town centres. Research says, as a result of Silver Hill, people will spend 27% more in Winchester than they currently do." Nick Simmons of MMX Retail Consultants said demand for shop space in Winchester was among the highest in the country and there were very few empty shops.
Complaints over new white lights. Sleep-deprived Bishop's Waltham residents have complained to county chiefs as light from new street lamps beams into their homes. Hampshire County Council's £120 million project to install 130,000 energy-efficient white lights, which they say reduce crime, road accidents and light pollution, came to the town last month. Almost 600 orange sodium lamps have been replaced, but the council has received 11 complaints and 31 requests to dim the lights since work began. Richard Sturt of Wordsworth Close was forced to buy blackout blinds because the light woke him in the early hours of every morning. "I woke up about 4 in the morning thinking it was dawn," he said. "It wasn't. It was the floodlights. Your body thinks it's a different time. I've gone out at night time to see if I can read a book. You actually can." Parish councillor Robert Shields said lamps which beamed light into homes were an anomaly. "They're pointing down. They don't cause light pollution," he said. "It looks like an old Victorian foggy road. It's patch, 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 patch." The last sodium lamps, which date back to the 1980s, will be replaced in the next 3 weeks. And there is a colour picture taken at night time of a Bishop's Waltham street on the corner with one of the white lights on the eaves of a roof. And the light certainly does appear to be reflected into what must be bedroom windows.
And here's another item from Bishop's Waltham, which is a little contrasting, I think. It's Judgment Day for Market Town. Excuse me. Bishop's Waltham bid to be crowned Britain's best market town reached its final stage as a competition judge toured the historic high street. Thunder and pouring rain could not dampen spirits as business leaders and parish chiefs welcomed Bridget Simmons, chief executive of the British Beer and Pub Association, to the town. Mrs. Simmons and civil servant Philip Dinkley were shown attractions and independent traders around the town, which has been shortlisted for the government's Great British High Street Award. Bishop's Waltham is one of three towns up for the Market Town Prize. Parish councillors highlighted the work of the town team, set up in 2012 after anxieties over the high street's future. The scheme, led by Market Town Development Officer Heidi Iser, has boosted trade confidence by 75%, according to a local survey. Mrs. Simmons said a small towns could learn a lot from Bishop's Waltham. "We're looking to build best practice which we can share with other market towns," she said. "Having a market town manager to me is a great idea. I'd love to come back. There are lots of shops I would have liked to have shopped in." She will rate the high street on originality, innovation and outcomes before comparing scores with other judges at the end of the month. The winner is set to be announced in November. Each category winner will share £50,000 prize money and receive coaching from business experts. And this is accompanied by a very bright picture of Robin Shepherd of Bishop's Waltham Society, Bridget Simmons, OBE of the British Beer and Pub Association, Philip Dinkley of the Department of Community and Local Government, and Amanda Redwin, chairman of Bishop's Waltham Chamber of Trade, all striding along the streets under red and white umbrellas, obviously in the pouring rain.
And now all the fun of the quirkiest fair. The fairground returned to Broad Street in Alresford last Thursday for one of Hampshire's quirkiest fun fairs. The event has been held in the wide road in the centre of the town for hundreds of years by royal charter. For 7 hours every year, the waltzers and other rides fill the street only inches away from houses until 9:30 p.m. when they are packed away for another 12 months. The rides are usually gone by midnight. And this is accompanied by several photos of delighted children outside the balloon-covered stalls, riding in a yellow and white striped teacup and riding on a roundabout in a pink and grey car directed by an inflatable policeman, and also trying to catch little ducks floating on a big pond in one of the stalls.
New Garden helps boy with rare condition. All he wanted was to be able to play in his own garden, and thanks to help from a children's charity, Formark's, 5-year-old Jamie Turvey's dreams have come true. Jamie has fibrodysplasia ossificans progressiva, FOP for short, a rare condition that causes his body to grow extra bone whenever muscle or ligament is damaged. It means his joints fuse together, making it very difficult for him to play independently. The Ropley Primary School pupil's arms are locked at the shoulders, while his spine and neck are fused. He was unable to access the garden because he could not tackle the steps and concrete slabs. But children's charity, Well Child, has built Jamie a new garden at his home in Bernard Avenue, where he can safely play unsupervised. Workers have transformed the patio by covering the slabs with artificial grass and replacing the steps with a non-slip ramp. It means that Jamie, who was also born with a heart condition, has a safe route into his garden and will make a massive difference in his life, according to parents Clive and Sureka. Clive said, "The world is a pretty brutal place, but this means Jamie gets a safe area, which is great. That was the biggest piece of the jigsaw for us, and we knew nothing about this charity until about 3 months ago. I cannot sing their praises highly enough, and we were blessed to have their help." And Clive added he was keen to raise awareness of FOP. He added, "The condition is almost like growing a second skeleton until your body freezes up. Jamie copes with it well, but it is all he has ever known. Prevention of further problems is key for us, hence the garden." The project was supported by help from contractors Osborne, with around 16 people taking part in the work. And there's a picture of Jamie with his parents, smiling away, in the garden, and the volunteers in the background, looking very happy, and a little inset picture of Jamie on the artificial grass, looking very pleased with himself.
And here's an item for perhaps our younger and more active listeners. Revamped bar plans to help community. It was a firm student favourite, but now a Winchester bar has had a makeover. Last weekend saw the launch of The Bar in the Square, formerly All Bar One, with wine, canapes and plenty of dancing. Mark Gorman, head chef, said people enjoyed tucking into the homemade food before heading upstairs after 10 p.m. to hit the dance floor. "We could not have hoped for anything better," he said. "We had groups that had not booked coming in to celebrate birthdays, and I guess people attract people. We were full. It was a beautiful atmosphere." He also said the bar is hoping to get involved with the local community, where possible, with sponsorship already in place for the University of Winchester's women's hockey team. "We're becoming more community mindful," he said. "It was portrayed in the past in a dim light, and we're very keen to put that to bed and show that we put something back into the community." On November the 8th, the bar will host a black tie evening in aid of Help for Heroes. For details, call 07584 838 286. That's 07584 838 286.
And this little article shows an aerial view of Naomi House expansion work. And the aerial view shows the existing Naomi House with its deep tiled roof nestling amongst trees, and where it's about to be completed into a semicircle, where the building work is about to happen. This photo shows the scale of the ongoing expansion work at Naomi House Hospice. The photograph has given hospice staff a chance to assess progress on the building work and to get a feel for the scale of the construction project. Clearly seen is the hospice's new steel-framed hub, which will be communal spaces, family accommodation, a dining area, a spiritual space, and a new butterfly bereavement area. Work is due to finish by summer 2015, and the charity's fundraising appeal continues. Staff at Naomi House and Jack's Place have secured £2.5 million towards their £4 million target. Further work includes increasing the size of children's bedrooms, creation of a new memory garden, and providing flexible spaces for arts and crafts, messy play and music therapy. The final stage of the development will be the building of a stunning cedar-clad bridge to link Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices.
And now some cricket news. Teenage Sparshot talent Tom Foster hit back-to-back half centuries as Winchester Warriors celebrated a winning double in the NatWest Under-16 Indoor League at the Aegeus Bowl. He hit an unbeaten 61 in Warriors' 63-run win over weakened South Wilts and followed it up with 52 not out against Havant, whom they beat by 46 runs. It was the first time in the Indoor League's 12-year history a batsman had ever scored two 50s on the same night. Foster wasn't the only batsman to make hay, as two Havant teenagers also hit half centuries. Hampshire women's starlet Emily Windsor hit a match-winning 55 not out to steer Havant home by one wicket against South Wilts, while Bobby Dyer hit a valiant 55 in his side's defeat by Winchester.
And that, I'm afraid, concludes the extracts for the weekending, the weekending the 24th of October 2014. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner, and thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. Thank you, too, to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Noel Thorpe-Tracy.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithful, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now, and I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet with the laminated card, and please place the address label inside the wallet too, and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you, and goodbye again.